they tend to not want to confront this president or even leave, but they know what they're doing is wrong. And I want to tell you, for these members of his cabinet who remain and try to defend him, they're not going to be able to go to a restaurant. They're not going to be able to stop at a gas station. They're not going to be able to shop at a department store. The people are going to turn on them. They're going to protest. They're going to absolutely harass them until they decide that they're going to tell the president, no, I can't hang with you.
That's Maxine Waters, the congressman. President calls her low IQ.
Extraordinary low IQ person has become together with Nancy Pelosi, the face of the Democratic Party. She just called for harm to supporters. So a lot of interpretations of what Maxine Waters meant there when she said what she said. Do you mean harassing Trump supporters? Do you mean just members of the administration? What is she suggesting?
All right, I'm going to call time out here. I'm going to call time out on the field.
Okay, I like that.
There's
everyone needs a few deep breaths right now.
And I
absolutely.
I think that our friend David Axelrod agrees with me on this, because I heard you say it. I'm actually just stealing your idea here.
Mm-hmm. But no, that's all right. They're free to be stolen.
the idea here is that I don't think the Democrats are helping the cause here by saying, you know, that this kind of, you know, harassment or denial of service, as it was in Sarah Sanders' case, it makes any kind of sense here.
No, I agree with that, and I said that. It created a little bit of a brouhaha. But look, I'd say two things about this. One is, just from the standpoint of our democracy and politics, you know, one of my great objections to Donald Trump has been his sundering of democratic, you know, institutions, norms, principles, practices, and his fundamental dehumanization of political opponents. I don't think you defeat that by emulating it. You know, Sarah Sanders was in that restaurant with her family. It wasn't a public event. You know, I just regret that. I understand what motivated. I'm not attacking the motivation of the people who were unhappy about that. But this is not a practice. This is not a road we want to go down. But to your point, it's also unbelievably ineffective. You know, people who are unhappy with what I said, well, you know, you can't bring a knife to a gunfight. They brought a butter knife to this fight, and it has absolutely no impact. I mean, the fact of the matter is, all it did was harden the two sides. It made it harder for people who may want to consider voting for someone who could act as a check on the president, harder for them to come over. It is a self-defeating policy as well. So, you know, and you know, I will say, you know, I don't think anybody has clean hands in this. I was just talking to a reporter who was down at the president's rally in Columbia, South Carolina tonight, and the rally starts in a few hours. But already there was a crowd assembled, and when they saw Jim Acosta from CNN came in, they started chanting at him kind of menacingly, to the point where security got nervous and so on. You know, the president has created a climate in which these things happen. I don't think we need to contribute to that climate. Well, I think we should resist that.
I think he is contributing to that climate. The climate has been developing in American politics for the better part of the last two decades, but it is really at a fevered pitch, and the president, no question, is turning up the heat, as David Gergen, one of your colleagues, has pointed out so aptly. All right, well, let me ask you this, though. I'm noticing Republicans, and it started with Marco Rubio, but I'm hearing a lot of echoing of this over the last couple of days, saying, listen, we don't agree with everything that the president says, because we don't agree with his Twitter or the way he handles certain situations. But he's doing what he promised he was going to do, what he got elected to do, at least in terms of the programs he said he was going to either enhance or cut and do the other sorts of things that he did, you know, the taxes and all the rest.
Yeah.
But that, and here's the thing, that the political messaging that I'm getting from this, and I'd like, as a professional political messenger yourself, I'd like to know what your thoughts are. They're saying, listen, you got to go easier, because you are the critics of the president, because now now Republicans, that's why he's got a 90% approval rating with Republicans, does Trump, because they feel defensive of him because he never gets any credit for anything. What is your thought?
Well, my thought is, and I had Marco Rubio on my CNN TV show on Saturday, and he talked about this. My thought is that you look at Jeff Flake, you look at Bob Corker, you look at Sanford in South Carolina, and all of whom are on their way out of Congress because they had the temerity to challenge the president. And you see a lot of fear among Republicans. There are certain things that should be criticized, and they won't criticize him. And remember, a lot of the policies that he's talking about are not policies that many of them had supported in the past. I am interested in someone who worked in the Obama administration about this philosophy that the people have spoken and they voted for these policies, so we have an obligation to support them. I wasn't aware that that was the thinking of many of those folks back in the Obama years. But look, I think they're afraid, Ro. I think that it comes down to that. This is Donald Trump's Republican Party. The Republican Party is in his thrall. If you challenge him, he will come after you, and it could be career-ending.
Yeah.
And they're all aware of that. And, you know, some have risked that, and they've lost. So there is, in a business where survival is the kind of defining mission, getting reelected. There's a reason Profiles in Courage was such a slim volume. You know, most politicians put their reelection first and foremost, and in the Republican Party, that means getting through Republican primaries. And Donald Trump has made it clear, and he taunted Sanford after defeating him. He taunted him at the Republican caucus in the House. Basically, the message was, you want to take me on, you're going to end up in private life.
Yeah. David, it seems as if there'll be yet another week of trying to coalesce around an immigration bill that can pass.
Yeah.
We're not there yet, is what I'm understanding. Tell us what you know there. Will this get done? Will something get done?
Well, I think the only thing that will probably get done, I suspect, is if they get anything done, is some sort of what they call skinny bill, a small bill to deal with this issue of family separation. I mean, the president really poured cold water on the notion of anything larger. He's not averse to changing his mind. I don't know if you've noticed that. So this, he could change his mind here. But here's what I believe. The president believes this immigration issue is a winner for him in November. He thinks that this is what will get his base out. And Corey Lewandowski, as much as said that the other day, he said people don't come out to say thank you. They come out because they're mad about something, and they're mad about immigration. And so I think Trump believes that this will really torque up his base. And that's why he went a step further over the weekend and said, you know, I think we should toss these people out without due process, because he knows that this will get a big rip-roaring debate going, and he's worried about turnout. You know, there's been all this talk about Democratic turnout being elevated. He wants to make sure his people come out. So I'm not sure he wants a solution to this issue. I'm not sure you could reach one either. I'm pretty sure you can't at this juncture, but I don't know that he wants it. I think he wants the issue more than the solution.
I want to play a little piece of tape here from the president and get your reaction to it.
We have to change our laws. We have to make them sensible. They came in to see me last week. They said, we'd like to hire 5,000 more judges. 5,000. You ever hear of a thing like that? Judges. Well, we're appointing 145 judges here, and everyone goes through this extreme vetting process. We're talking about 5,000. Where do you find 5,000 people to be judges? And you know what it leads? It leads to graft. It leads to a lot of other things.
Well, I don't know where he's coming up with that number, because that's not the number. They're asking for 300
more. That's not close to true.
Yeah.
And the bill that he ridiculed was offered by Ted Cruz, because there is, if you're going to have this zero-tolerance policy, you're going to have to adjudicate a lot more immigration cases. And so Cruz and others sensibly suggested, well, you're going to need more judges to do that. And he summarily rejected that and threw out this ridiculous number and the notion of graft. If he's worried about ethics and graft, he might start with some of the members of his own cabinet.
Yeah.
So, you know, look, he is playing with this issue. He thinks it's a winner for him, and he is going to turn up the dial on this thing from now to November. That's my prediction. Remember, there is no crisis at the border. There is no massive flood of people crossing the border. There have been at times in our history. This isn't one of those times. Donald Trump has created this crisis, and he's created a humanitarian crisis because it serves his politics and the narrative that got him elected. It's a vile narrative, but it's been an effective one for him.
Before I get to my question, this is the one thing. When he throws out numbers like that and says 5,000 or earlier, he was saying they want thousands and thousands of judges, or there's thousands down there. There's 355 down there, and they want 300 more. That's the fact.
375, according to Senator Cruz's proposed legislation.
Correct. So you've got Senator Cruz, not exactly a shrinking violet of the left. Now, I would say this, that the political calculation here, that he wants to be tough on these people, is lost, I think, on women voters. And because I think that even though he got a 90% number this week, I'm not sure that takes into account, this Gallup number takes into account the entire week. It'll be very interesting to see if they break that down to Republican women voters, what he's lost in a week, because women had a very specific reaction to this development of the kids being separated from some sort of an adult down there.
Yes. Well, I think the images of those children, first, I don't want to limit it to women because I was in tears. I think a lot of parents and grandparents and people with beating hearts were in tears about the images of those children, but I think women reacted very strongly to it. One of the questions I have is, what does this do to women in the Trump base, non-college educated white women? Polling suggests that they, by a wide margin, dislike this policy. Does that translate into votes? The other theory I have is that, they may feel they're worried about the House. They need to hold the Senate. This kind of stuff may help him in the 10 Democratic held Senate states, which are red states and voted for him, five of them by overwhelming margins. In a lot of these suburban Republican districts, I think this is going to work very much against him and could cost him the House at the end of the day, because the battleground in those House districts are by and large more diverse. Many of them are in suburban areas, and I think those women are going to play a big role.
David, thank you very much. Appreciate
Thanks, David.
It. As always, David
always
Axelrod.
Good to be with you guys.
Right, thank you so much, sir.
Talk to you soon.
All right. We've got now checking in with Judy. What's coming up at the top of the hour?